Hello.
Yo, dude.
Hey, what's happening?
Nothing much. How you doing?
Oh, good. Good. Just cruising.
The reason I wanted to talk to you is because I have a longtime listener who submitted a question that brought up some inner turmoil for me.
Okay.
And I was hoping that you could help me work through it.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm here for.
All right. Let's do it. Crispy in Australia asked, Dave, have you ever been called out on your surfing etiquette by somebody close to you? I was having a fun small wave session with a couple of mates, and we were goofing around, dropping in on each other, as you do with you and your mates when you're not having a serious session. Anyway, after I caught a set wave, I paddled back out and I said to my buddy, snaked you there, haha, sorry. He replied, don't worry, I'm used to it. I was like, what do you mean? He proceeded to tell me that I do it every session and I have done for years. I was rattled. It was almost an intervention. I have always been a frother, but never thought of myself as a wave hog and somebody that snakes. I said to my mate, I can't believe you hadn't said anything to me before. He replied, maybe it was just time you heard it.
Whoa.
So do you know why I'm reading this to you, Joel?
I do, David. I do.
Do you really?
Yeah, a little late summer sesh at Cardiff Reef, my friend.
What happened?
Oh, you know, same sort of thing. Fun times. Hey, let's, you know, you come down from up there in the OC or whatever you guys call it up there and join us down here at Cardiff Reef for, you know, our normal Saturday session. We go out having a good time. Everybody's good. Yeah, I catch a nice little wave, a little right-hander, as Cardiff often offers. And Mr. David Scales and his black surfboard decides to just drop in and, you know, all just in fun times. Yeah. Is that what you're referring to?
That's exactly what I'm referring to, and I still feel sheepish about it.
Oh, yeah. Leash and everything.
This is my official public apology to you, Joel. I am very sorry for what I did to you that day.
Oh, come on. All in good fun. All in good fun.
Here's the real deal, dude. I remember specifically when that wave was coming, you telling me that I could go for it and I could burn you. Did you or did you not?
I did, actually. Yeah. In coming clean, I did say go for it. Go for it. We were having a good time.
Okay. I don't know if everybody else heard you say that, because when I took off, I actually felt like it was all cool. But then kind of when I was paddling back out, I got weird vibes from like the other guys we were with that maybe I shouldn't have taken off, that even if you said it was okay, it was the set way. It was the right of the day, the set of the day. And maybe I just should have been, even if you said it was okay to go, maybe I shouldn't have gone.
Oh, come on. No, it was all in good fun.
By me going in front of you, did I diminish the joy, your joy of that wave?
No, not in that session. We were having a good time. You and I don't get to surf very often together. And so I felt like, you know, you're coming down. We were just having a good time. It was a small day. It was, you know, all in good fun, my friend.
So that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking maybe Chris B's friend is just the curmudgeon who needs to learn that sharing is caring.
Yeah. I mean, I think it depends on the time. I mean, we were definitely, that was a fun, you know, a fun session. I get it if it's like a thing that would happen all the time where I could feel you getting a little, like, you know, getting a little grumpy if that's like a regular occurrence, you know?
Well, you have my public apology, and I mean, in all honesty, I know you gave me the okay. I've always felt bad about it ever since.
Oh, so. Accepted.
All right, dude. Well, thanks.
Oh, yeah. No worries, bud.
If you have thoughts or an email you'd like to share with me, do it through surfsplendorpodcast.com. That's where Chris B got a hold of me. There's also a comment section there. Lots of people are chiming in, sharing interesting takes on all of our surf ranch discussions. There's also a lot of comments, kind of equal parts support and vitriol for my show with Chaz Smith. That's always fun to review. And then also, you just heard from Joel. After he and I finished that portion of our conversation, it was a phone call, we were catching up, and he mentioned that he had signed up for Health IQ based on hearing me talk about it on this show. He's going through the screening process still, yet to be approved. Again, they offer lower life insurance rates for people who live a healthy lifestyle, the same type of incentive that car insurance companies offer for being a good driver. So he's yet to be approved, still going through it. But Joel mentioned it to me because he just wanted to tell me that the people at Health IQ were super cool, nice, easy to work with. I think we all kind of hate calling companies, whether it's insurance companies to discuss something or having billing changed or just anything like that. But Joel said they were super easy, really enjoyable, and just an overall good experience. So if approved, he will save money on life insurance simply for being healthy. HealthIQ.com/SurfSplendor is where you go to learn more and to support this show. Just make sure that they know you heard it here, and then you will support us. You'll save money. Everyone wins. And then also, nothing but positive feedback from listeners who have been using Fanatic.com. They are the Netflix of Finns. For $10 a month, they mail you Finns to your home. You keep them as long as you want. Send them back. They will send you the next set off your queue. All of the postage is covered with your $10. It's an instant quiver expander. I'm currently riding the FCS2 Carver Finns. I've also got a Rainbow Finco 7-inch cutaway fin. And then next on my queue, I'll just scroll real quick, are Futures Lost Seaworthy Quads. I'm going to try a quad set. And then John John's medium-sized Tech Flex newer fins are the next set of thrusters that I'm going to grab. So anyways, I'm like a kid in the candy store on here. I have more fin options than I have sessions in a week to test them all. It's a good problem to have. So again, if you use our promo code podcast, you will get your first month free, and Fanatic will continue to support this show. Fanatic.com, promo code podcast. Thanks. Today's guest is the first of his kind here on this show. I dove into 2018 with the goal of broadening the scope of this show, adding new themes, new show formats, new voices, and this episode is in that effort. We've had photographers, filmmakers, writers, plenty of surfboard shapers, but today is our first surfboard laminator, Alex Superwolf Villalobos. And again, part of my 2018 efforts is just breaking down some of these fundamental terms that we use all the time. Construction terms like laminating or hot coat, we're going to break those apart. And then design terms as well. You know, what does single concave do? What does double concave do? We're not going to get into the design stuff so much in this episode. We'll reserve that for surfboard shapers. But construction stuff is right in Alex's wheelhouse. So that's a lot of what we're going to unpack today, along with, of course, his origin story. The other goal that this episode achieves is in trying to highlight unsung or undersung figures in surfing. Shapers get all the glory. So let this episode be the first of many that broaden the focus of that limelight to include the many people who are involved in the process of building our surfboards. So this is David Scales for Surf Splendor. I hope that you enjoy my conversation with Alex Superwolf Villalobos. Enjoy. I'm just visiting. I am finally seeing. Well, I was the one worth leaving. Well, I was the one worth leaving. First of all, Superwolf has to be the coolest name in all of laminating, maybe even all of surfing, I would say. Who gave you that?
It's kind of ridiculous, actually. So when Instagram started, my wife kept bugging me that I should be on it, you know? And I didn't really want to go on it. And she, like, created an account behind my back. And then she... I forget if it was me or her, but so prior to that, a few years, we're going to a Halloween party, and it was like a costume party, and it was like last minute. I think it was superhero themed, so I went to CVS or something, and they had a wolf hat, and being that my last name has wolf in it, I was like, oh, I'm gonna be Super Wolf. So we made this ridiculous costume with an S and everything and a cape. And then that's That's where that came from.
So she based the Instagram handle on the previously costume.
Yeah,
worn costume.
Yeah, as like just a stupid joke because I was like, no, I don't want to be on there. You know, I don't want to.
So do you officially go by that now or is it just your Instagram handle?
That's just my Instagram.
Your family's some people, not calling you Super Wolf?
No, never. That's why it's hilarious because it's like, man, yeah. I guess I should have thought that one out a little.
No, it's awesome.
Better.
It's actually, I thought it was like in the surf world, I'm like, that's one of the cooler nicknames right up there with Laser Wolf, which is the photographer in Hawaii.
Yeah.
I'm like, Laser Wolf's pretty cool.
I think I follow that guy.
That's a pretty rad wolf.
Yeah.
Have you bought into Instagram after your wife forced you to get on there? Do you use
it? It took a while. Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, how can you not? It's addicting.
I know. It is for me. I'm always amazed sometimes that people aren't.
Yeah.
I feel like the surf world lives there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, surf pictures and boards and all kinds of stuff. Yeah, it's really hard to not.
But it's
cool.
It's like Hollywood uses Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, like, and maybe they have an Instagram account, but like they live on Twitter. Whereas I feel like nobody in the surf world cares about Twitter.
Right.
But we're all on Instagram.
Yeah, you know? We don't have,
maybe because it's more visually based. Considering that you're the first laminator we've ever had on the show, I'm going to rely on you to help define some terms for us for the conversation moving forward. I'm referring to you as a laminator. Is that accurate?
That's very accurate. Yeah,
it is. Okay. Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. I mean, there's so many of us, so it's kind of trippy and humbling at the same time to be chosen to do it because there's so many.
You were referred by a number of people, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Like, over the years, a number of people. I don't know if they found you through somebody's boards that you're doing or maybe just through Instagram or something. But, yeah, a number of people over the years asked me to reach out to you. So, what does the laminator do?
We take the blank and we basically wrap it in fiberglass and resin as best as possible.
Okay.
You know, nice, tight, light and tight. It's always been the motto.
Mm-hmm. Are you responsible for the finishing of the board as well then?
No, okay. But I mean, it's all like a process, right? Like clean shape, you do a clean lamination. That means the hot coat comes out clean and the sand job comes out clean. It all comes out really good at the end. It's all like a process. It's not just, you know, without a proper shape, my job's impossible.
Sure.
And if the guy after me, you know, messes up the hot coat or something or the sander, he could screw the whole thing up. So it's all part of the same process, you know? Just one part of glassing, what everyone considers glassing.
Right. So to clarify for listeners, in some operations the glasser is one person who's doing the laminating and the hot coat and the polish.
Sanding and polishing. Sanding. Okay. It's all glassing.
But in your world,
I'm just laminating.
Just laminating.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. One underlying theme that all the board building conversations I have here, that I have on this show, there's always this question of quality. You know, board builders will be like, oh, I build quality. My boards are better quality than somebody else's. And so I'm always trying to kind of get at that question, what is quality? So for you specifically, what element of your job defines your work as quality as opposed to any other laminator?
There's so many bad glass jobs out there, but there's also so many good ones, I think, you know? So I mean, it's such a weird thing with surfboards. You could do everything to the best of your ability and everyone create this beautiful surfboard. And one mistimed maneuver or one, you know, closeout barrel or you didn't, you know, you tried to go out the doggy door and something. You just snap your board just cleanly in half. Or you leave it in your car one hot day and you come out and your whole deck's like delaminated from your nicely worn in footwells on your tail of your favorite thruster or whatever, you know? So
yeah.
It's weird. But I mean, quality is to me, like you look at a surfboard and the color is just blemish free and perfect. The cut lap's really perfect. The polish is not waffled, which is like when you heat up the board too much, and you can almost see like the weave of the fiberglass through it. Like it gets this real like waffly texture on it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I kind of lost the plot on the question right
no,
now.
No, it's okay. Just how do you define quality? A number of those things that you just mentioned, color kind of saturation,
yeah.
Being able to see the weave, sound like aesthetic things. Are those related to A, performance, or B, structure at all?
Kind of both. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if you have a really wet lamination and it's puddly and everything, you know, it looks like shit. And it's probably going to be heavy and brittle, you know? I mean, there's no strength in laminating resin. It's all about the balance of using the proper amount of resin in the fiberglass, you know, to get the strength that you need.
Got it. Yeah. So, quality could equate to like the structure and the lasting structure of the board, wanting it to be obviously wanting the board, the finished product, to last longer.
Yeah,
would be an indicator of quality. And you're saying more resin isn't better,
huh?
You're saying more resin isn't better.
No, it's
not. It can become more brittle.
No. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You know, and the opposite too. If you don't use enough, you just dry it out. You know, that could be a problem too.
Okay.
So,
whose boards are you laminating?
Right now, currently doing mainly Jeff McCallum's, Joel Tudor's boards, and Ryan Birch.
Okay, three clients.
And then sometimes we do Mitzvins. We do Eden's boards, Dead Kooks.
Okay.
Do some of his. Although as of late, he's injured his shoulder.
Oh.
He like broke it or something. So I haven't been doing too many of those. But
okay. What's your workload like? How many can you get through in a week?
Right now, we're doing probably like anywhere from 16 to 20 a week.
Okay.
You know, it's and they're all pretty much all like resin color, pin lines, glass on fins, glossed and polished, you know, real like labor intensive stuff.
Got it. Is that
so? That's a good amount. That's okay. A lot of work.
Got yeah. It. That's what I was wondering. How long have you been board building?
I started at Moonlight Glassing at about, I think it's like 95.
Okay.
Yeah, I was trying to get into the industry for a while, but it was hard. And my friend, Jimmy Jazz, who's also, I mean, he's pretty well known in the industry. He got me in. He was polishing at Moonlight. And there was an opening for a guy to come in and do the satin finishes, like a wet sand and gloss. And that was basically it.
Had you had any backyard experience or anything at all?
I mean, just fixing my own dings.
Really?
Yeah. I had one of those little, like when I was a kid, I had those little, what were they called? Dingall or something back in the day? It was like this
Dingall's
little,
a brand for sure.
Yeah. So yeah. It was like a little tub and it came with like a little square sandpaper and a little bit of resin and
yeah.
Like a little cup to mix it all in. And I remember my mom reading the directions on how to do it.
That's so funny.
But that was it. I mean, I didn't even really know what hot coat was or sure. What any of that was when I started at Moonlight.
So you grew up surfing then?
Yeah. I mean, I was pretty young when I learned. Not as young as, you know, like some of these guys that grow up basically on a surfboard and they don't remember. But I think I was like maybe 11.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I think I was 12.
Yeah.
How old were you when you got that job?
At Moonlight?
Yeah.
Probably early 20s.
Oh, okay.
95. I'm 45 now. So yeah, it's probably like, all of a sudden I can't do math when I have a microphone in my mouth.
The internet will be sure like to call you out on
early
that.
Early 20s for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Moonlight's got quite the legacy. Like,
oh,
I mean,
yeah.
So many.
No, I was pretty fortunate to end up there.
Who'd you, who were you working around that? At that time, and also
pretty
like,
much everybody
mentors?
At Moonlight to me was like full on legend.
Were they?
Know, they were all doing what I wanted to do. It was like surf, build boards, and just be stoked on it, and you know, do really cool quality work. You know, And it was all, everyone there surfed at the time too. It's kind of weird now. Some, you know, there's some shops where like people don't even surf.
I know.
And you could feel it when you walk in. You're just like,
I know, isn't that weird?
Yeah, it's bizarre. I don't know how you could do this job and not surf.
I feel like there's an element of just like being a good craftsman that translates, or like really good with design, you know, and then you can design things. But I think you're then relying all your feedback. You're relying on feedback from other people for, so it makes it a lot more challenging, a longer learning curve, I would think. Yeah. A lot will get lost in translation when you're communicating with somebody.
I mean, I can understand if something were to happen to you and you, for whatever reason, you can't really surf anymore. But like, there's people that weren't ever really surfers and they get into it. And that always trips me out, you know?
Right.
How did you stumble into this thing, you know?
Super like, weird.
So weird.
Yeah. Who were some of your mentors there at Moonlight? Who were
Of your formative relationships? Pretty much everybody. All the original, like the four owners, which was Gary Stuber. He was the laminator. Peter St. Pierre, airbrusher, pinliner, you know. Kenny Mann, he was a sander. And Mark Donnellan, who was the glosser and polisher. And all those guys were like, you know, they were gods to me.
Yeah.
Wow,
man. Yeah. And they would, you know, we'd talk story all the time. And they had a grip of old school surf mags too in the break room. So I used to work late in the evening there and into the graveyard shift, and in between boards or whatever, if I had to take a break, I'd sit in that room and just like look at all these mags.
Yeah.
It's a great place to work.
Yeah, it seems like it.
Yeah.
Comes up all the time in conversation.
Yeah.
Is that where you met Jeff?
No, I didn't meet Jeff till years later through Joel.
Oh, okay.
So I worked there for a while, learned how to laminate. Was also doing, you know, I started like glassing my own boards.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately, I saw Gary Stuber do a resin color lamination. It just blew my mind. And I was like, oh, I need to do that. You know, this is the coolest thing ever. So I started doing my own boards with resin color. And I also started realizing that at the time I thought I was going to just be a sander, you know, because I was working doing wet sanded glosses, which you're using a machine. And it's similar steps, you know. But I was surfing like, was probably like 20 something, so I'd surf like all day long, and then I'd come in and try to throw around this machine all night, and it was just getting so beat down. And then I just saw Gary in the other room, you know, just pushing resin around with a squeegee, and it looks so easy, and it looks so like it's not going to ruin your shoulders. Man, was I mistaken. For sure, you know. But you know, and then I saw him doing resin color. I thought that was super cool. So I just started doing that on my own personal boards.
Okay. So you were shaping
as well? And then I started getting more and more into laminating and realized like, oh, this is what I want to do. You know, this is the step in this production factory that I would like to do.
Why?
It appealed to me. I'm not sure. I don't know why. Maybe it was the resin color. You know, it was like the freedom to do whatever, all these colors you want. This was still like probably 95, 96 or something. And the fin guy there, Ernie Higgins, who's also one of my mentors, he shortly after I got into laminating, I was also doing ding stuff at my house and glassing a few boards because it's hard not to. And I just wanted to get the experience, and I was just fired up. But Peter at the time, he had a, like, back, I don't know, at, like, during that era, like, backyard guys were, it was almost like the overseas board building, right? You know, because, like, you had the big shops, they were paying permits, and they had this and that, and workman's comp, and then all these little backyard guys were, like, undercutting the big shops. So that, those were, like, the bad guys at that moment. And when Peter found out that I was glassing boards at my house, like, he freaked out, and I got fired.
Oh, no.
And it was, like, the worst day of my life, yeah. You know, because I'd already been, like, super committed to this. I was like, oh, man, but I totally knew. I understood why, but at the same time, it's like, man, how do you not, you know, I'm like, I was doing it for the experience, mm-hmm. and to just learn how to do this. But that only lasted, like, 24 hours or something, you know. We like worked it out afterwards.
He saw the error of his ways.
Well, yeah, and so did I, you know. Yeah, I mean, I totally get it, you know.
Yeah.
I lost my train of thought.
No, we were getting to how you met Jeff.
Oh yeah, yeah. So anyways, I have to ask. It's kind of a process, I think. So Ernie Higgins was opening up his own shop, and there wasn't no way in hell that I was going to have a full-time job as a laminator at Moonlight, because Gary was just a beast, you know. He had, I mean, I would help him out, but then when it would slow down, I wouldn't have that work anymore. So I saw, like, oh man, if I'm going to be a laminator, I can't really stick around here, you know. Nor did I want to, like, you know, that's his
yeah,
deal.
Yeah.
So when Ernie decided to go start his own place again, I think that was like life number two for his. He's own a shop called Waterlines. And he was going to open it again, and it was down here in San Diego, which is where I lived.
Sure.
So I was like, oh, perfect. And so he offered me the spot of the head laminator, or to have a full-time job. So I came down with him there, and I met actually Rich Pavel.
Okay.
He actually, because at the time we were doing mainly clear production, high-performance shortboards. Okay. Rusties, you know, whatever it was. The color thing wasn't even, it wasn't, I mean, it was like people were doing color work on weekends. It was like a side project. You know, you do your like 10 or 15 clear laminations a day, but your resin tint cool stuff was done only on like Sunday or Saturday. But I was, that's what I wanted to do, but it just wasn't, there wasn't enough of it.
Sure.
And then when we came down and worked at Waterlines, I met Toby. He was shaping there, and he's bringing us boards, and he's actually the first guy that gave me, he just let me add it with his boards and doing color, and I just kind of, you know, probably hacked out a bunch of color boards for him. Yeah. I have no idea what they look like anymore. And that led me to Joel Tudor.
Okay.
That's how I met Joel. It was before I think it was about the time he was thinking about starting his own label. He was still kind of writing for Donald. He got a brewer board shaped, and we glassed it at Waterlines. So I met him then, and then like, he's, you know, fast forward to him starting a surfboard label, and I went back up to North County to work for Tom Eberle. I mean, long story short, I went from Waterlines to there, met Joel, got his company. He brought his company there. And then I met Jeff through Joel.
Okay.
I can't remember if it was, I think he was just about to start Kookbox.
Okay.
And Jeff was one of the shapers that he tapped into. And I needed some extra work, and I remember I was like bugging Joel. I was like, hey, put me in contact with Jeff. And I think he needed a laminator, so he was kind of doing the same thing, and that's how that was a connection.
It so much of the work that I'm, your work that I'm familiar with now is color work. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to hear you say that that wasn't even a part of the surf world back at that time.
No, not really.
Doing clear?
Not at all. You know,
was it mainly like high performance shortboards?
And if you're getting it color, it was like airbrush.
Oh, okay.
You know, so I mean, I credit Joel Tudor with sort of like bringing that style back, because okay. There was guys doing it, you know, like one or two boards here and there, you know, but Joel actually was like, I want to start a surfboard company that has nothing but like the traditional method of the 70s, 60s, whatever, resin color, gloss polish, pin lines, all these things. And he just like went for it, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, he went around to all these shops all around Southern California when he was trying to get his boards done, and shops left and right were like, "Oh man, we don't have the capacity to do your boards," you know, like, or they'd try to talk him out of doing resin color by, mm-hmm. "Well, let's do some of them, and other ones we could do with airbrush."
Yeah.
And it wasn't until he came to Tom Everly's place Tom Everly was like, "Sure, we can do it all, you know, let's, it was just perfect timing."
Sure.
It wasn't like we were some talent, super crazy glass shop that only did this. Like, we hadn't done it yet, but we wanted to, okay. You know?
It seems like the bottleneck for so much of the surf industry or board building industry is like those glass shops need to do volume to yeah. make a living.
Yeah.
But then once they're doing volume, they don't want to do anything outside of the normal workload. They don't want to do channels. They don't want to do color. They don't want to do any extra work
yeah.
because it's going to affect the number of boards that go through the factory.
Right.
Which is really short-sighted.
Yeah,
because
that's a crazy situation to be in.
Or,
you know,
just charge more
yeah.
for the added work.
Yeah.
You know? Seems simple, but I don't know. The surf industry oftentimes...
I think that's kind of going away, and I think a lot more shops now are, I mean, they've been changing. So there's some really good shops out there now.
There really are. You guys leading the charge, I think. And then there's also clientele that's willing to pay for that now. Mm-hmm. You know, like, not everybody's asking for a bro deal. People actually want quality.
Yeah.
So,
well, there's still the bro deal people.
There's plenty of that. Let's get into board building. We'll talk about technique and more of that kind of color work, but let's focus on materials for a second. Again, simplifying the conversation for the listener, having never heard a laminator before.
Yeah.
There's fiberglass. You get the shaped blank. There's fiberglass cloth
yeah.
that you wrap it with, essentially. Yeah. And then the resin is a liquid chemical that then hardens that.
Yeah, yeah.
So what are your preferred materials to work with? Is there a type of cloth, a brand of cloth, a type of resin, a brand of resin? Help delineate some of these things.
I mean, I just use the standard resin right now, is Silmar resin. I don't really mess with epoxy
okay.
at all.
So polyester resin.
If the time
resin.
Ever comes, then I'm totally down. But right now, I mean, I know a lot of guys that have worked in both, and they end up getting like allergic to the epoxy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then they can't work with it. So, I don't know. My theory is, I see no need for it personally. You know, it's cool that people are doing it, but I'm too busy doing my stuff, which is with polyester resin. It's not like all of a sudden I have no work and I'm like, oh man, what's going on? I guess I should switch over to epoxy. If that time ever comes, then I will, but I just don't want to do both simultaneously.
Is that decision seems like it's based on your history of working with it. Is there any performance differences that would make you want to use epoxy over
A poly? Good portion of my work is lately has been like logs, you know, like okay. like longboards,
yeah,
all kinds of longboards, and that whole scene seems to be sticking with
okay
polyester resin, Volant cloth, you know, stuff like that.
What's Volant?
Unless it's like high performance longboard that, you know, these guys are on tour with, doing off the lips and aerials with, and they sure. want like a 5-pound longboard, but that's different.
What's Volant cloth?
It's an older cloth. You know, I've never really been like a full tech guy, as far as like I can't tell you all these the chemical breakdowns and all this stuff. But to my understanding, Volant was like a boat cloth. And at the moment, I can't remember if it's either rinsed or non-rinsed in a certain wash to give it like this greenish, you know, color to it. I believe it's a little stronger.
It seems to be.
Yeah. Than regular. And we actually have 4-ounce Volant, 6-ounce Volants, and 8 and 10-ounce Volant. And I've glassed my own boards with the 4 ounce full, and it kind of lasts a little longer than regular 4 ounce.
Okay. Yeah. And what's regular 4 ounce? What are the other types of cloth?
There's silene cloth, and that's, I mean, 4 ounce E, and then there's E glass, there's warp glass, there's S glass, and I mean, I could tell you how I sandwich the different.
Yeah,
glasses, but that's kind of like my little secret.
Oh, okay. By all means, keep it. Let me ask you this then. You mentioned 4 ounce, 6 ounce. Ounces, is the weight based on what size?
Yeah.
Is it 4 ounces based on per square foot?
Yeah.
Or, okay, got it. So thinner or lighter cloth, medium cloth.
I could be
cloth.
Wrong on that. Like I said, I don't know exactly what entitles it. 4 ounce. I probably sound like a big moron right now, but
no. I mean, everybody just refers to it as the ounces, but I think it might be per square foot.
Yeah.
So 4 ounce being kind of the lightest option of cloth.
They actually have lighter stuff than that. But
oh, they do.
It starts to get really hard to hand laminate it, and it's more for like circuit boards and stuff. They have like half ounce cloth, even.
Got it.
2 ounce cloth.
Okay.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
What kind of colors are you using? Are they like obviously resin, tints and pigments?
Mm-hmm.
From where do you have preferred supplier of any of that stuff?
Or? I'm using pretty much all of it is from Fiberglass Hawaii.
Okay.
Yeah. It seems like they once they came along with they have a whole bunch of colors. They're really nice tints. But it used to be sporadic, you know. It used to be like you get like your opaques from a certain company like RevChem. Certain tints you'd get from this old company called Hastings. I believe they're not in business anymore.
Okay.
And then there was another one. There was an old surfboard supplier called Ashland, and I think Ryan from Surf Supply I can't remember if he worked for them, but they shut down. Surf Supply came up, and they had another color company called Curox, and they were pretty cool too for a while, but seems like Fiberglass Hawaii just kind of came in and took over, because they have some really good products as far as like all their colors.
They also, I'm sure, I think, are formulating all those colors for the surf industry specifically, which I don't know if that was the case previously. I don't know what the colors from those other companies would have been made for.
I mean, they were made probably for surfboards and boats.
Too. Okay, for the marine industry at least. Yeah. Okay.
But they were all made to mix with polyester and epoxy. You know,
okay.
Yeah, some of them come. You can mix them in both.
Okay. We're talking about technique. We're talking about the materials. I want to know how these things translate in the water to performance in a surfboard. Obviously, we're all familiar with getting a brand new board and having that board feel very fresh, lively, have a lot of pop. and then we're familiar with a board that's dead after you've had it for a long period of time. I mentioned to you earlier that Maurice Cole, I think it's Maurice Cole who this quote is attributed to, yeah, talking about how a board is at its best just before the thing delaminates.
Yeah.
So like you've gotten used to it. Some of the structural components start to break down, but before the thing goes completely dead is when it feels the most responsive,
yeah,
the right degree of responsiveness and liveliness. I don't know if he might have said that quote in the 70s, and I don't know if he would stand by it today. You know,
it's totally true.
Is it true? Is that how you feel too?
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. It's like it's weird. It's like surfboards have a life, you know, and I think. I mean, that's a valid statement, you know, for sure.
I guess what
I think a while ago, things kind of took a turn for the worse, man. Like, I mean, so when I started at Moonlight, like a standard surfboard, you came in, you paid for a glass job, it got finished out. And what I mean by that is the board got every step it needed. You know, it got a gloss coat, and that's a crucial step, in my opinion. But somewhere along the line, like, people wanted what the pros were riding. Well, the pros get sanded finished boards, you know, and they're riding them just for a few months, and they break down so much faster than if you were to finish it off with a finishing resin, like a gloss coat. Like, and I think that's really important. And I remember, it was towards the tail end of me working at Moonlight, a big surfboard company, they sent out a fax to all the shops that said they didn't want to do gloss coats anymore. Standard is now sand finish. They wanted the laps, which we can get to why, but the laps were to be a half inch. They wanted to cut all the weight out of the board. But these were boards getting sold to the public because this is what people wanted. They want what Kelly Slater's riding. They want what Rob Machado's riding, you know. But they're going to pay retail price for a board that's going to fall apart.
Right.
You know, maximum you could, if you take care of it, you might be able to get a year out of it. But if you surf every day and you're kind of, you know, if you don't take care of it that well, you leave it in a hot car or whatever, you don't fix your dings that much, it's going to break down a lot faster. Especially if you're doing a shitty, you know, lamination or the sander is a little heavy on it. But yeah, I think, and that's kind of when things took a turn for the worse.
Yeah.
In my opinion, that was a clear break to me from how things were going to all of a sudden it opens the door for, why are we paying this much money for these crap boards? You know, where we can buy a surf tech.
Right. Can you explain what a hot coat is?
Hot coat is basically, so after I laminate a board, all it is like, it looks like it's got like a burlap texture.
Okay.
You know, it's got the texture of the fiberglass weave, but it's like clear, you know, it's like you can see the blank, and it needs to be, like the Australians call it a fill coat. So you just paint the resin on, it hardens, and then you sand that back to what the shaper intended. You know, the board to look like all the edges and all that kind of stuff.
It's a different type of resin than was used.
It's the same resin.
It's just the same exact resin.
There's a surfacing agent, which is like a wax. It's added to it.
And that fills in all that weave and lays flat and smooth. Yeah.
You just paint it on and it levels out and, you know, it turns into a surfboard.
Got
it. Where you can take it out and ride it.
Okay. Got it. So I guess that in regard to that Maurice Cole quote, my question to you as the laminator is, why not try to finish a board in the condition that Maurice is talking about rather than, I don't know.
Yeah, some guys do that.
Do they?
So I think maybe what he's talking about is at that moment, you've ridden that board for a while. You got your foot wells, your dents in there, and it fits like a glove, you know. And then after a while, it's so dented in that, I mean, it just pops off because it's,
right,
you know.
The lamination separates from the foam, essentially.
Yeah, and that could be cause, you know, some people are like, oh, my board delammed, it was a shitty lamination, but they don't realize, like, maybe you left it in a hot sun, you know, because that could do it easily. Mm-hmm. Like maybe you left it in the hot sun or in your car, it bakes, the stuff expands, and it just rips off the glass. But maybe maybe that's what he's talking about, like right before that happens. And yeah, it makes sense. Like the board's still solid. I mean, but that's what we're all after, to like keep that going. But going back to your question, there are a few shapers that they're shaping in like the footwells already.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen that.
Yeah, I've seen Brian Chizmansky do it. He's the owner of Dinking.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I know.
And who else? I think I've seen Stu Kenson do it too. Yeah. I've seen a few guys do that. It's pretty smart.
Just recently I've heard Tom Curran talking about, you know, riding that skim board, and one of the benefits of it is that his feet are closer to the water than they've ever been before. And I've never thought about that element before. I just think of thickness and volume being more for the design itself rather than the placement of my feet to the water surface, you know? Yeah. But he's like talking about like how that affects his surfing. And so I wonder if you can actually make a real surfboard, not a skim board, or if the benefit of those footwells isn't necessarily to do with the structural components of the board breaking down. It might actually have to do with your feet being closer to the water's surface in that scenario. So if you could just shape them in,
yeah,
retain the board's structure of being brand new and still get the same performance benefit.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never had good luck. I've ridden a few boards that had like concave on the deck. So
yeah,
you're closer to the water, and I didn't like them at all.
Really?
Yeah, that's just me.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm definitely nowhere near Tom Curran or,
sure,
you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guys that they love that feeling. But I can't really speak about it because I've every time I've tried one, I didn't like it,
right,
at all.
You've been in the game for quite a while, and you talk about when Joel Tudor came along, bringing this kind of throwback style of color, Volan, yeah, all that sort of stuff. What's been the best addition to laminating since you've been in the game? Is there a certain material that's come along that's kind of revolutionized things, or maybe a process that's vastly improved? You know
what? I mean, what we do is just strictly traditional. There's nothing futuristic about it, you know? Like you asked me earlier about which fiberglass I use. I used to use, what was it called? JPS. And then I loved that for a while, but then, you know, like little imperfections started happening. So I moved over to a different company called Aerolite. And that was good for, I mean, we were using that for years. And then all of a sudden something happened. And they, you know, every other roll I'd have to send it back because it'd be like some weird, like a misweave or like a knot. And that stuff shows up when you add resin color to it. Just looks like shit, you know. So right now I'm currently using White Line. And I'm pretty sure it's a Korean cloth. I think it's made in South Korea. But it's right now it's the most consistent glass, you know. I rarely have problems with it. So
the biggest variation with the different cloths is just the consistency of the weave itself?
Cosmetically, you know, for like doing a nice color lamination. I mean, structurally, I don't think it really matters.
They're all pretty similar?
They're all pretty similar.
Okay.
So this is just to get, you know, someone just paid Skip Fry their arm and a leg for a shape, and they bring it to me, and you know the last thing you want to do is like use some glass that's gonna like mess up, you know, the whole color, right, of their board. Like,
right,
they'd be bummed. They just paid a lot of money for it.
Completely.
So, but yeah. So right now I'm using that company, that White Line.
Isn't it interesting that for the past 50 plus years, I mean, I don't know, mid-50s, early-60s, we started making boards with polyurethane foam,
yeah,
fiberglass cloth, and polyester resin. And today, it's still the best combination of materials to use.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if it's the best, but it, you know, I think we've been using it for so long that we just have it super dialed.
Do you think there's inherent?
I mean, actually, back then Bob Simmons was already experimenting with epoxy and, you know, doing like sandwich construction. So that stuff's been around a long time too.
Right.
Yeah.
But still, never really took. It's still a second, you know, a second option. It's the default option is the poly stuff.
Yeah.
Do you have any expectations for what the next big thing would be, or are, is there anything on the horizon that? Material or otherwise that you're looking at that would revolutionize board building?
It's probably right here. We just haven't used it yet, you know?
Yeah. Do you think a lot, I mean, you said it might not be the best, but it's what we're familiar with. Are there inherent performance benefits?
I think there's a lot of really good things. I'm not saying that it's inferior. But it is inferior, I think, if you build it a certain way, like how all these high-performance shortboard companies, how they want you to build their boards, I think it's inferior.
Like you said, without the hot coat and stuff?
Well, no, without like a gloss coat.
Got it.
With short laps, you know, just super light.
Right.
I think what the I'll explain about the gloss. I think what the gloss does is just it extends the board's life.
Okay.
And I'm a firm believer in that. I gloss all my own boards, and the weight and the life of the board lasts so much longer. It'll be like years before it has that dead feeling. Where if I just do a board sand finish, it's got that dead feeling pretty soon. Like within a year, it just has this like. You're thinking about the next one. But that's just the nature of the beast, right?
Sure. I mean,
surfboards have lives.
Yeah.
It's not going to last forever.
Sure.
Logs do, though.
Yeah, they last forever.
Yeah, I mean, longboards, you know, you glass a thing with 10-ounce Volan, and that thing's going to last forever.
For listeners who don't live locally or don't have access to your boards, what are some things that they can look for in terms of if they want to get a quality board from their local shop, let's say, are there any indicators where they can go in on the rack and identify some of these things that you're talking about?
It's kind of hard to tell if you don't know if your board's been glossed or if you have like a resin color board, you could see if the thing, it's all right there in black and white, you know? If the thing's been sanded through on the lap, you could see the discoloration.
Okay. So you're looking for consistency in the color saturation and...
Yeah, and it's a lot harder to tell on a clear board, you know? Because, like, you could fix all that stuff. It would be kind of hard for the most part for someone that doesn't really know how to look at it if the thing's going to fall apart or not. I mean, it's kind of hard for me sometimes.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, if you don't know the process, if you didn't see how it got laminated or how the guy mixed the resin, all that stuff, it could all just be hidden.
Why do you think laminators have been so anonymous in the process? Like, obviously the client that we're talking about can go in and look at the board on the shelf and identify which shaper shaped the board,
yeah,
and associate that with some level of quality or whatever. Why can't they see who did the other processes of the board? Why have you guys stayed so anonymous is the question.
Because the shapers didn't want us down.
The shapers are stealing all the limelight.
Yeah, exactly. No.
I mean, they have, you know, but yeah. I feel like it's because laminators have allowed them to, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, you're probably right.
I mean, there are some glass shops that do put their laminate.
Their label on there,
on it.
Yeah.
But that's kind of a newer thing, too, I feel like.
No, it's been around. Like, Moonlight's always had their laminate. Yeah, they used to have the old frog. And now it's like the little oval. Well, it's
a little quality indicator, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of just a like a blue collar job, you know?
It is, yeah.
That's all it is. So we're not like looking for any recognition and stuff, but it is nice to be known for doing good work.
Are there any misconceptions that exist in the marketplace that you would like to correct?
It kind of goes back to that comment where I think in general, like surfboard construction took a wrong turn when they decided to do away with certain steps, whether they're trying to streamline it or get the thing lighter or save some money. But I think it's really important to finish out the surfboard and get a fucking gloss coat on it, you know, and complete the process, you know. Or, I mean, I guess that's where like the whole like the epoxy market comes in, because you don't really need to do that with that.
Okay.
I guess you should, but yeah.
Is that because the epoxy resin fills in the weave more fully?
Well, it's a little stronger.
Okay.
Not much. I mean, epoxy boards break all the time.
Sure.
Yeah. So.
So back to cover our steps in terms of quality. Consistency in the fiberglass weave itself from the supplier, from the raw material supplier, fully saturated, like you said, but not overly fully saturated, like just the right amount of saturation, consistently filling in all the weave, and then a gloss coat. Those are the keys.
Well, I mean, the whole process, like a nice tight lamination, a good hot coat, and a really good sander. You know, because the minute he burns into the weave, it causes a weak point. It also starts with the blank. You know, if you get a shitty blank where, you know, the guy didn't mix it right or whatever, it's like a weird inconsistency in the foam. I mean, you could put as much glass as you want on something like that. It's going to break or it's going to delam. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I've, you know, it's almost like an egg. You could put, like, you know, 10 layers of 10-ounce Volan glass on an egg, but it's still going to break because it's just an egg.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
There's nothing to it.
Right. You have a partnership with Visla.
Yeah, man. It's been pretty cool.
You're the only laminator that's on their team, right?
Yeah.
As far as I know?
Yeah.
How did
it's
that
something,
come about?
It's something, like, you dream about, you know.
Yeah.
You're like, because it goes back to what you're saying, like, you know, like no one knows who glassers are, but
exactly.
You know, we do a whole lot, you know. So it's always, you know, I've always joked around with coworkers, like, man, we need to get sponsored for doing this, you know, this is a whole performance, you know.
How did that
happen? Then all of a sudden they came along. It happened through Jeff, because he became part of their creators and innovator program, which is them kind of sponsoring guys that, you know, whether they're shapers or like me, a glasser, or I forget the one dude that does like the woodwork stuff.
Oh yeah, Danny Hess.
Yeah. No, and then the other guy that does like the trailers out of wood and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, Jay Nelson, yeah. Maybe?
Yeah. So they just do cool stuff like that.
Totally.
Yeah. And they wanted to get a laminator on there, or, you know, someone like that. So I think Jeff had a lot to do with that. So thank you, Jeff.
How does that relationship work? What do they expect of you, and what do you expect from them?
I don't expect anything from them.
Really? Well, yeah, it works out well for them.
I mean, it's, you know, it's pretty cool. They support me as far as like, you know, they clothes and stuff like that. So it's cool. For me, they get, like, we've done a few runs of, like, prints where... So the first one was, you know, I do the stripes, the faded stripes on boards. Mm-hmm. And they did, like, a run of shirts and shorts from it. The next one is we did, you know, so they'll take a piece of, like, resin color or like an abstract or resin art, let's just say that, and they'll make t-shirts out of it.
Got it.
So that's how it works.
And do they put your name on it? Give you artist credit?
I think they do, actually. The couple of items that I've gotten from them, I just give them to my dad.
Really?
I just give them away to my brother. Yeah.
I think it's really rad that they're doing that. Like,
It's really cool.
It's just so cool.
Yeah.
I feel like...
just to give attention to it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, so much of the surf industry, well, magazines will be like very kind of high performance shortboard focused for so long, you know, or brands themselves, like those are the only athletes that they sponsor. That's the only thing they promote. And I think that by and large, the industry has underestimated surfers' interest in other things, you know, and not just other types of surfing, but other types of photography, other types of art. And if they put that stuff in their magazines or if they shine the light on it, they would really open up a lot larger clientele than what they currently have, you know. Like, I stopped caring about high performance shortboarding a long time ago, but I still buy the magazines because it's like, oh, that's my only option, really. You know,
You want to see the pictures. You know?
So bravo to Vizsla for like tapping into that, honoring it, and then sharing it with people, you know?
Yeah, no, it's been amazing for them to do that. I couldn't, I mean, it's, you know, like I said, we used to dream about it all the time.
So, it's crazy.
Yeah.
How closely do you follow professional surfing, whether it be the CT or just other aspects of professional surfing?
I follow it, actually.
Do you?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't have like a fantasy team or anything like that.
Bummer, you could join my league.
But I do watch the contest. I mean, it's cool to see what these guys are doing, you know. It's fun. It's fun to watch. It's kind of boring when the waves aren't that good.
Sure.
But it's still, you know, pretty exciting to see stuff go down, you know, when guys light up and all of a sudden they're on a tear. Or when guys choke and, you know, they get beat by somebody that they shouldn't, you know. It's pretty cool too.
I mean, that final exchange at the Pipe Masters between Jeremy Flores and John Florence.
Yeah, that was like amazing.
The pinnacle of our sport. Yeah, it's like that was amazing. You know?
I was so stoked for Jeremy.
Were you?
Yeah.
You're Jeremy.
I mean, I was rooting for. I'm a JJ fan for sure. So I was rooting for. I was like, oh, the kid's gonna do it. You know, he's gonna get his title and the Pipe Master finally.
Yeah.
And then Jeremy just got that sick one at the end. And it was just done deal. Like, wow, does that happen?
I feel the same way as you, where it's like, of course I prefer John.
Yeah.
But he's already got the title, so it's kind of nice to spread the love and let Jay Flo win it. But also, Jeremy, 16 seconds left.
Yeah, yeah.
You need a big score.
Pulled a rabbit out of
it. And he does it.
Yeah.
So you gotta applaud that. The guy's got
for sure.
Tenacity,
yeah.
You know?
Oh, I was freaking out when that happened. I saw the wave too, and I was like, this guy's gonna get it.
Really?
And as he was getting to his feet, you're just like, oh my god. Yeah.
Dude, I was at Costco with watching the stream on my phone when that went down. I had to pick up Christmas cards that were being printed, and it was like, I have to go right now. I can't stay home and watch the final, but I watch it on my phone at Costco.
Yeah. No, it's fun. I definitely watch it. Yeah.
What other surf media do you follow? Do you actually subscribe to any magazines?
Every year, my mom, for Christmas, she renews my subscription to Surfers Journal.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So that's the only magazine you get?
Yeah.
Why don't you get the others?
I used to. I just don't really anymore. Sometimes I'll buy a surfer mag at the store.
Based on what?
If there's a cool article in it, you know. But I basically, I mean, everything, you can kind of go on their website and see what's going to come out. But I think it's important to continue putting out those magazines, though, for
Is
sure.
It?
Yeah, I think so. It's cool. Maybe just because it was a part of my upbringing,
right?
My childhood, so I'm kind of nostalgic about it. I'm not sure if other kids feel like that now.
That's what I'm curious about.
Yeah.
That's why I'm asking, because I don't subscribe either.
Right.
And it was a huge part of my youth, and it's like, why don't I?
A lot of times I didn't buy them too because we like the shop would get one.
Right.
So it would be on the table, and then like, you know, so you're reading it, but you're not actually purchasing it or. Right.
what media do you follow? Are there any websites that you check daily? Or
with the exception of Surfline, just to see what's going to happen. Yeah, it's pretty much the only... sometimes I'll go on the forum of Surfer Mag.
Oh, yeah.
If, I don't know, sometimes, like, if something crazy happens in a contest, like, I don't know, like, some drama happened, like, someone got an interference and I don't know what happened, I'll just go on there and see if they're talking about it, just to kind of see what happened, you know?
Yeah.
Or I'll go on the design forum just to see what people are talking about.
The design forum on Surfer Mag's website?
On Surfer Mag, yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. But that's rare. I don't really go on there that much.
That message board is something I don't check often enough.
Yeah.
People bring it up to me occasionally, and it seems like there's a real active community there.
There is,
of knowledgeable people.
It's been around for a while. It's crazy. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's still, like, the format of it is so old school that I'm, like, waiting for somebody to come along and, like, do a better version than theirs, or for them to update theirs.
Yeah.
Looks like it's out of, like, 1998 or something.
I think it is, right?
It is.
But, yeah, as far as, like, the other, I mean, I basically wake up and I check the cams, and then I check my little Tide app, and that's pretty much it.
Which surfers are you most excited to watch? If a web edit pops up, like, who will you stop everything to watch?
Oh man, there's a bunch. Let's see. I guess the newest set, you know, for me, the newest guy recently that I like to watch is the Australian guy Torin.
Love him.
Yeah, super cool.
Torin Martin.
Yeah, he's got a really cool style. It's
really refreshing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's an element of, like, very traditional surfing that he's doing mixed but with...
Those boards that he's riding are crazy, too,
What's he riding?
He's riding Morning of the Earth boards, and I don't know who's shaping them, but it's just crazy that on some of those waves that he's riding, like, Desert Point and all, he's riding, like, a 610 twin fin round pin or something, and...
I've seen that he tags Morning of the Earth surfboards. Is it based on the film? Is there...
Yeah, I think it's got something to do with that.
I mean, it would have to. Yeah. I mean, it's not only a reference to, but there would have to be some... You can't just... Legally, you can't just use that name. I would think that there has to be a family member involved in the building of the boards.
Well, I think... what's the guy that made Morning Earth? Albie?
Albie Faison?
I think he's got something to do with it.
Okay.
I'm not sure, though.
Yeah.
But I believe he does.
I've also seen him doing, like, really radical nose riding in the barrel on maybe not that same board you're talking about, but shorter fishes.
Yeah.
Like,
backside. The way he, like, side slips into the barrel backside is crazy to me.
It's so sick.
Yeah.
Does he have sponsors?
I hope so.
I don't see any stickers on his board.
He should be.
Like, what's he doing?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, really rad. Who else?
Ryan Birch is always really fun to watch. Yeah.
How's it been with him, working with him on his boards?
Oh, great. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Him and his partner, Scott, run a super solid business.
Okay. I don't know Scott.
It's his business assistant. It's like his right-hand man out here as far as his surfboards go.
Is he shaping or just doing the business operations?
No, he's just helping Ryan.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, you know, so that all Ryan does is shape. So Scott, like, runs his whole deal.
Is Ryan building a lot of boards?
He's building quite a few. I think he could build more.
I feel like if he wanted to, he could be busy all the time.
No, I mean, like, the future's his. The kid's an incredible shaper.
Right.
And he's an incredible surfer.
Right.
I mean, that's like a recipe for, like, I mean, it's almost like he's like the next in line of, like, Skip Fries or Mark Richards. And there's, like, Ryan Birch. I mean, he's a really good shaper, man. He's just going to get better and better.
Have you ridden any of his boards?
No.
Why not?
I'm talking to him about getting one. I just don't... I've never really been a fish guy.
Oh, okay.
I've always ridden, like, little single fins or a thruster, but I've never really gotten into, like, short little fishes. Every time I get one, I end up selling it because I just don't really connect with them. But I'm talking to him about making, like, a long fish. So we'll see if it happens.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
who are the laminators that you look up to and why?
Well, there's a whole bunch of those guys too. Some of them I've never met, like Wayne, that he still does, but glasses for Donald Takayama. He was like my Instagram when I was starting out, you know. He was like, there was the only way to go see what other people were doing was to go to surf shops. So I would go and check out what he was doing. He was the only other guy really that was doing color work that would have him in surf shops, you know, where you could go see him. And his were by far the best.
Hmm. What's his last name?
I can't remember right now.
All right. Wayne at Donald Takayama.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
See, that's what I'm talking about. You guys don't, you so little, you get so little credit. You don't
I've
even know each other's last names.
I've actually never met him too, you know,
it's which crazy. Is funny because he's nearby.
Yeah. I just never had the opportunity to stop by or, you know, had the chance to run into him, but he was a huge inspiration. Jack Reeves in Hawaii, and then close to me, Gary Stuber, and Greg Martz too, up at Waterman's Guild.
Yep.
I talked to Greg on the phone quite a bit, but I haven't yet been up to, well, actually I met him once a long time ago. I was up there looking for work, but they didn't need a guy at the moment. This was, I think, 04 or 03 or something. I don't know, when I was working up in, I think we talked about it earlier, when I was working, doing Dano boards.
Mm-hmm. They're glassing a board for me right now, actually. Waterman's.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Yeah.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Who else? Yeah, those guys for sure. And then, I mean, there's a whole young generation coming up that are all pretty good, you know. My resin brother, Nainoa, he's laminating for Christensen now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He was like my one and only protege / apprentice, like, back in the day. But he's super, super good, too.
I was actually going to ask you that. Do you have kids coming around the shop asking to learn?
Not as much as you'd think, you know? I know of that was pretty much it, but that was a long time ago.
It seems wide open.
Yeah,
it seems
it
like
does. That's kind of a that's sort of a problem, at least down here for us. There's not a lot of kids that are want to come up and start at the bottom and just work their way through the shop. And I think it's important to, to come in as a shop rat and you know have the job of, you know, just doing whatever needs to get done, whether it's throwing the trash out. But that very beginning, it kind of puts you in line to start learning all these little things.
Right.
It seems like a lot of kids nowadays just want to come in and just be instant shapers. Or they want to, like, they just, it's weird. I mean, I'm not saying there's none of them out there, but it seems less and less.
I mean, we live in surf central of the world in terms of board builders, the industry and brands and everything. So you would think there would just be hordes of people lining up trying to get access to all the most important people. And it's really bizarre that there aren't.
We had a hard time getting a sander.
Really?
At our shop. Yeah. And like the ones we have, they're busy at other shops. So it took a while to find one that could dedicate their time to our shop. But it's crazy how, you know, you'd think like there'd be like a line out the door of like people wanting to, but yeah, it's not really like that. Now, it could be different in Orange County. I have no idea.
No, it's pretty similar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does your guys' shop have a name?
I think legally it's called Mac Glass.
Okay.
But there's no sign or anything like that, you know, which obviously stands for McCallum.
Yeah, I've only heard people reference it as like, McCallum's boards or whatever. Like, I've never heard anybody refer to the glass shop itself. But you're obviously glassing other people's boards, so it warrants having its own, you know, business name.
Yeah.
So you can brand it and get it out there. And not that you need more business, but...
Yeah, What else? Yeah, I mean, there's so many. I'm probably forgetting people that I look up to as well. Yeah.
If you could order a board from anybody in the world, what would you order and who from?
I would love to get Jerry Lopez to make me a single fin. He did a few for Joel a long ass time ago, and I glassed them, and they were just beautiful.
Were they?
Yeah. He would be someone I'd be into it.
What kind of a single fin?
Just his like lightning bolt style
pipeliner.
Yeah. Like. Who else? Neil Purchase Jr. would be someone that I would like to get a board out of too.
What would you get from him?
I'm not sure. He was making these little, like, I think they're single fins or maybe like a 2+1. They look really nice though. I don't know how often he comes over here though.
He was here not that long ago.
Yeah.
What about him? What about his boards makes you want one of those?
The outlines look really nice and the rails feel pretty good on them.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm big on stuff, you know, if it feels good, then it must ride good, right? Like,
it's
like
funny.
Like one of my favorite shapers is Malcolm Campbell.
Oh, yeah.
And I've always, from the time I started working at Moonlight, because they used to do a lot of his, pretty much almost all his bonzers and all his boards there, and always used to just drool on his rails and the way they felt under the arm and the way he'd foiled out, you know, like the way the foam was
distributed.
Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for.
Well, it's funny that under the arm test thing is so true, and yeah. it's not something that you could even like communicate over a podcast to a listener, like, hey, feel for this.
Yeah,
it's just you put it under the arm and the way the weight is distributed and hangs in your arm.
Yeah,
and yeah, like you said, the rail and the way it looks when you're looking down.
Yeah, it's trippy how some boards they call for like a little heavier, but they still feel balanced when you hold them under the arm. So that's pretty important. Just have it all balanced out.
Right. I feel like you could get that Jerry Lopez single finner if you wanted. Like, you got to have connections to him, right?
Yeah.
You wanted to track him down?
Yeah, I think I could.
Is he just taking orders? Or
I have no idea.
Is there a wait list?
I have no idea if there is or not. Yeah.
I'd be curious about that.
Who else? I'm like brain cramping right now.
Well, you only get one.
Yeah,
for this,
just
for this
one?
Hypothetical
okay.
game, so you already picked.
That's impossible. Yeah, probably Jerry, because I don't have one, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting how, like, so many of the biggest icons are still around.
Yeah.
Like, you can get a Brewer, you can get a Skip Fry.
That's because it's so young, you
right.
know? The whole thing is so, it's still so, it's like a teenager or,
totally.
You know, preteen even.
It is.
Yeah.
I feel like there will be a time 100 years from now, 3 generations from now, where there these Fries and Jerry Lopez boards will be the equivalent of, I don't know, some impressionist painter's artwork or something.
Yeah, I think
know?
So.
Except it's functional.
Yeah.
It's functional artwork.
That's why they need good glass jobs, so they stick around for as
That's
long as possible.
That's why you need
possible.
To put a laminate on there with your glass jobs company brand name. Super Wolf laminate. It could be the wolf face with the cape. what's your current quiver look like?
Right now I've been riding my 7.0 single fin that Toby Pavel shaped, Rich Pavel.
Yeah.
And I haven't been able to get off that.
Is it a newer board or?
He actually made it for me like 15 years ago.
Wow.
And I never rode it for a while. Just, I'm not one of these guys that could like ride a thruster and then tomorrow I'm going to ride a single fin, and I would be a disaster if I were to do that, you know? So I find a board, I like it, I get 2 or 3 that are similar, like a small wave version of it, a big wave version of it, and then I just ride that till I'm just absolutely sick of it, you know? Or I'm like ready for something different, and then I'll jump on that one. So right now I'm currently riding this this single fin that he made me, and it's beautiful. It's got wedge stringer, and it's similar to like a 70s kind of pipeline single fin board, but it's 7.0, kind of more for like California.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you ride it in all conditions?
I ride it in pretty much everything unless it's, you know, small. Then I have a little egg, this little like 6'10" egg that I can ride in. Well, if it's like, if I'm going to go ride like La Jolla Shores or something, I'll ride my egg. I won't take my single fin.
How many of Pavel's boards do you have?
Right now I only have one, but in the past I've had a whole bunch.
Are you, are they all as amazing as
Yeah, that? They've all worked really good.
Do they?
Yeah.
That's what I've heard.
And I've had all kinds. I've had, you know, 6'4" thrusters from him, high performance. I've had like 6'10", 7'2", like, you know, little wintertime blacks boards like that. I've had single fins from him. Everything works really good. Yeah.
His strike rate seems really amazing.
Yeah.
Like, even with shapers who I have gotten a lot of boards from that I love, there's still always some that I don't love as much as others, but everybody I talk to who's had his boards rave.
Yeah.
How do you have such access?
Probably because I used to glass his boards.
Does he?
And I've glassed his boards on and off for a long time, you know, over the years. Because, I mean, yeah, I consider him like a big part of my, you know, surfboard development, I guess.
Okay.
You know? Yeah. Like I said, he let me loose on all his boards before I even met Joel. I was doing color boards on Rich's boards, and then on and on, you know, and then he would be Rich and he'd disappear somewhere, like, I don't know, like Europe or something, and then he'd come back and, you know, all of a sudden he'd appear in this other glass shop that I'm working at, like, for example, Tom Eberle's.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we were doing, do you remember Rainbow boards?
Yep.
I mean, not from where it started, like Mike Hinson, but the new version with Johnny. So we used to do a lot of those too.
Okay. If you wanted a board from him today, would you be able to get a hold of him? And
he's in Bali. Yeah, I actually did. I reached out to him because I'm already thinking ahead of, like, I need a, you know, not that my board needs any, you know, I have to replace it now, but I was just thinking ahead.
Yeah.
And he's in Bali now, so I don't know when he's going to come back. You never know with him.
Well, that's why.
If you say his name three times in a row, though, he might appear.
See, I heard you had to be looking in a mirror and do three turns and say it.
We used to say that, and it actually worked.
Did it really?
Yeah, we'd say Toby, 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 or Rich, Rich, Rich.
And there's like a puff of smoke, and he shows up.
Just, seriously, he'd appear within an hour.
It's foam
how
dust.
How did you do that?
So the reason I ask about Rich, about you being able to order a board, is all I hear is that he's super elusive and that, like,
oh, he's very elusive.
And exactly what you just said, like, show up one day and he'll chat with you for 3 hours as if he has all the time in the world, and then you can't get a hold of him again for a period of time. And then if you do order a board, don't expect it in any reasonable amount of time, but
or you might might get it pretty fast.
Okay,
you never know with him.
So that's what I was wondering, if you're the only guy in the world who has him on dial that you can get aboard whenever you want. That's what I was
well
wondering.
I mean, it'd be nice to think that, but yeah, that's not the case. I got most of the boards I got from him was when I was working at Waterlines, and he was also shaping there.
Okay,
so it was real easy.
You're right.
You know, he had blanks and it was right there, and we, you know, he'd be shaping and I'd be glassing, and we'd be there for like 8 or 10 hours at a time. So it was real easy to do that. I got my single fin from him when I was working at Channon, which is now Bing.
Yep.
And he was also shaping there. And it's funny because he was shaping these models. I think he was calling it the Sean Thompson single fin because they were based on a Sean Thompson board or something. Or reminded him of Sean Thompson's, the blue, like, you know, free ride boards.
Yeah.
And he made me, he made these beautiful single fins, and I was like, oh man, I would love one of these. You know, he's, oh, okay, yeah, this one's yours. And then, oh, just don't glass it yet, because I need to put your name on it. So then, the next day I'd come in excited to see the board, and the board would be gone.
Oh no.
And then it's like, you never know with him, you know, you're like, oh man, where did it go? And then he did another run, and which is the one I currently have, and it was the same thing, like, Rich, I want one of these, like, come on, like, can one of these be mine? I want this one. And he'd be like, sure, but I need to put your name on it, so don't glass it. I'm like, no, I'm not falling for that one again.
Sign it
right now. Yeah. And I ended up, like, glassing it real quick, and yeah.
If you have a photo of that, send it to me so I can post
it. My car.
Oh, is it really? Yeah. Okay, perfect. Let's grab a photo before we leave.
My boards never leave my car.
Dude, you're going to delaminate them.
I always have. I have a garage at home. It's in the shade. And then at work, I leave all my windows down. So I'm pretty careful about leaving that.
For the listeners, that's the trick. Windows down and leave the car in the shade. If you're going to have to leave
it. If you're going to leave it in the car, yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
I've killed so many boards, magic ones too, like just leaving it in the car.
Yeah. What's your current relationship like with surfing?
I try to surf as much as possible.
What does that equate to?
Sometimes every day. Today I didn't surf, but I was down at the beach checking it. It was micro.
Yeah.
Let me see. I didn't surf yesterday either. I try to leave Sundays for hanging out with my wife.
What a nice guy.
Because I surf so much, you know. So, my whole routine is I get up, I go to the beach, whether I look at the cams or not, and then either surf or decide, oh, it's not too good. Let me go into the shop.
Life of the laminator is not too bad, man. Get to surf still.
If I couldn't surf, I don't know if I could do it. It all goes hand in hand, you know? I start getting weird if I don't surf and it starts to show in my work.
Right.
Yeah.
It's important. It's therapy. Final question for everybody interviewed is just, what was the last surfboard that you rode?
As far as, what I rode on Saturday?
Yeah.
My 7-0.
Perfect. I had a feeling that was going to be
single fin, yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll get a photo of that and post it. Anything else that we didn't cover that we should talk about?
I'll probably stop this interview and be like, man, I should have talked about this or I should have mentioned that.
Yeah, but you could think of anything at all.
I don't know. Tom Eberle is one of my big mentors too. I don't know if you know much about him.
No, I know his name through the industry, but yeah. I don't know much about him personally.
Amazing person. He's like a dad to me.
Really?
Yeah, he lives in Nicaragua now. But his shop was kind of like the catalyst of Joel coming in there and bringing all this work to us. As far as like resin color and this whole thing, like when it all started, I learned a lot from him too. So I always like tell people, like I went from K to college at Moonlight, and then I took my master's at Tom Eberle.
Oh, that's a good way of putting
Tom Eberle University.
Does he still surf?
Oh yeah,
good for him.
Yeah, he lives down in Nicaragua.
Yeah. So he's scoring down there?
Yeah. He's retired from shaping, even though I think he shouldn't because he makes such amazing boards. But, yeah, he still surfs all the time.
Good. Good for him.
Yeah. Actually, if you need a place to stay at down there, he's got a room and board.
Whereabouts?
Colorado.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Is he at Hacienda Iguana, like on that property?
Somewhere close to there, I believe. Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. I think it's cool that you actually reached out and wanted to talk to someone like me from the industry. I think it needs to happen more.
Good. Yeah. Thanks. I appreciate it. It's funny, when I first started doing the podcast, it was like 4 years ago, actually, tried to keep conversations pretty general and broad. And that's not what the listeners want. Like once I would start getting into like kind of detailed design conversations with shapers. And as the interviewer, I would steer away from it because I thought it was too nuanced and too heady for listeners to really care. And all of the feedback I've received over the years is like, no, we want more of that. Like the more detail, tell us what cloth you use, tell us which resin brand, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Like people want to know, you know? I think there's a lot of misinformation on the internet, first of all. So like there's more information available to people than there's ever been, but there's also more misinformation. So people walk into a shaper's shop and just be like, hey, I want this much volume in my board. And the shaper's like, what are you talking about? Like, you don't know that. And like, that's not what I do, you know?
Yeah.
And so there's a kind of danger, but I think the podcast is a great platform to actually give detailed, accurate information, you know? But then I'll interview some multiple shapers and they'll say conflicting things, and it's not right or wrong. It's just this guy does it this way,
right,
and that guy does it another way.
Yeah, I mean, there could be some people are going to be like, this guy's full of shit. Like, it's all about like new materials and epoxy carbon, and all that, yeah, and carbon wraps. And I think that's really cool too. And you know, maybe if I don't like boards that are super light, you know, I never really have. When I was living in Florida, I grew up in Florida, I'd probably be singing a different tune.
Sure.
Because the waves are crap most of the time, and you know, you're surfing, you know, short period windswell, poly chop,
yeah,
you know, like 1-2 foot chop.
Yeah.
So you probably want like something super light and responsive. Not that the boards I'm building aren't light and responsive, but I
think that's actually a really good point, is what you're saying isn't gospel, and it's not the Bible. It applies to what you're doing for your customers.
Exactly, yeah.
But if you go to Hawaii, order a board from Eric Arakawa or Pat Rawson or whatever, and then when you go to Trestle, you know, like, there's boards for regions.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I know. Surfing's so big now. It's like there's so many avenues to it, you know? There's so many different directions to go, and I think there's a market for it all. It's
right.
You know?
Which is why it's understandable that there are like models that are available throughout the world by a given brand, because it is this global thing and people want to simplify the process. But for me, I'm always advocating for develop a relationship with a local shaper.
Yeah.
Have them understand the way you surf, the waves that you surf, then get a board from them, surf it, come back, give them feedback, get another board from them. Yeah. Hopefully by the time you get to 8 or 10 boards, you'll have something that works really, really well for you. But it takes a lot of time, but that's also the joy in it. You know,
like, you're also supporting a really good, you know, a really good industry. And you're kind of like, you know, you're supporting your own, basically. We're all just surfers. This is our job. You know, I mean, it's surfer labor, you know?
Totally. and that's part of the fun in it too, is like figuring out why it works, why it doesn't work. Like, that whole journey is the joy. You know, I don't need a board that just surfs perfectly every single time. I want to kind of figure it out. And so, So anyways, glad to do it, man. Thank you for taking the time.
Sure. Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
You Super Wolf. I will not ever be referring to him by his given name ever again. Henceforth, he will always be known as Super Wolf in my mind. And you, the listener, can be cool by following him on Instagram at Super Wolf. And then I'll be posting photos of his work through this week on our Instagram page at Surf Splendor. I've already posted photos of him and then of everything that we discussed in this episode on our website, surfsplendorpodcast.com. You can also leave a comment in the comment section for Alex. If you do, I will ensure that he receives it. And then, of course, while you're on our website, click over and support the brands that support this show. It's all for you. You'll get to instantly expand your quiver and simultaneously explore fin design at fanatic.com, promo code podcast. And then healthiq.com/surfsplendor. They are alleviating the insane burden that weighs on our U.S. healthcare system by financially incentivizing people to live longer and healthier lives through diet and exercise. It does not sound revolutionary, but it is in the world of life insurance. So if you're healthy and you need life insurance, healthiq.com/surfsplendor. If you already have life insurance, just humor me and follow that same link. If you qualify, you'll save money and you'll support this show. healthiq.com/surfsplendor. However, maybe you ride finless surfboards and you don't need Fanatic. and you throw caution to the wind without having life insurance. I'll tell you right now, finless surfing, it's bad for your knees, but I still admire you. There's a unique reward that you can receive by supporting this show in other ways. It comes in the form of a warmed heart when you click the donation button on SurfSplendorPodcast.com. It feels so nice, and it ensures that you'll receive future episodes of this show. So you can do that. And then lastly, share the show with friends. We'll produce the content if you operate as our guerrilla marketing team. You can rate and review the show in the Apple Podcast app or whatever app you listen in. And that's just paying it forward for strangers. That helps strangers to find the show by increasing our rankings. So thank you for those who have already done it. And if you haven't, I'm going to thank you in advance. All right. Until next week, this is David Scales for Surf Splendor, reminding you, get in the ocean, share some waves, and shred on.